Intangible Assets Advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. We're always actively involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, coins, trying to help people make wise decisions with the sector that we're in. Been doing some interesting examination lately on coins and the future of certain numismatic coins versus metals, and I'll keep you posted, just kind of working on developing some theories as far as what the future holds. It's interesting because we've got a new generation coming up, you know, and they're very dependent on non-assets, or at least not, you know, I don't know. I mean, you tell me, folks, does collecting always remain throughout history? I think it has. I think quality is always quality. I think rarity is always rarity. I think special things are always special. I think what's happening a lot with metals and coins is the coins are becoming worth their precious metals content. That's been largely due to the Federal Reserve, or not the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Mint, pumping out tons and tons and tons of products each and every year. Folks, don't buy all that stuff. The U.S. Mint sends out flyers, and they send out ads, and you're going to get ads through Parade Magazine and all these other sources where you're seeing this stuff and where you're hopefully not buying it, but it's always what we call modern. It's either modern product or they'll have these little, I don't know what you'd call them, you know, just little kits, little plastic holders with old coins in them, with an Indian penny and a buffalo nickel and a steel penny and obsolete coinage, they'll call it, or something like that. And people, they do spend money on those. I mean, we have a showcase in our shop that we kind of behind the scenes and have an endearing name. We call it the Dennis case because Dennis has been with us like 20 some years and he always, you know, breaks stuff down and puts it out there. But we have so many things in there that you can literally buy from us for $3, $4, $5, $7, $8 that are in magazines for 40 and 50 and 100. And I mean, it really is absurd the amount of margin that they make on that stuff. It's absolutely wrong. And so coins themselves are a good investment. I have plenty myself. I have a lot of nice rare coins. I especially used to really share collecting and investing with my father. We had a very wonderful time together. He was interesting because he put a lot of his money into coins. He made some bucks. I mean, we did okay over time. And it's not that hard to do if you know what you're doing and if you're getting guided properly. I think that's the most important thing, is that you're getting the proper guidance. And that's really what we want to do for you. And so I'm actually doing some reevaluating of some things that are, you know, out there. I personally, one thing you don't have to worry about is if you've bought stuff from us in bulk, dollars, you know, whatever it may be, that's the stuff that's going to hold up no matter what I determine. I don't know on other side. It's hard to know. It's just hard to know because when the Mint is producing so much stuff every year and they're really dipping into people's capital, they really are, it's hard to know where the line is drawn. Where will it end? When will it stop? And where is the capitalized threshold? In other words, when will people stop having money? And why do people keep buying this stuff? I mean, we get people that will literally buy stuff from it. I saw a guy here a while ago who had spent like, you know, a couple $100 on coins online or on through the mint or something. And then he sent them in to get them certified. Okay. They come perfect in the box. They're perfect. But he probably saw some out there and someone said theirs was an MS-70 or Proof 70, which is the highest grade, which really doesn't matter, folks, on anything modern. It sells for more for a while, and then it comes back down, and then they'll always tell you what the 1994 this and that did because they didn't have computers cleaning that stuff up back then. Now everything is fully computerized and generated and operated so that you don't – there's really no imperfections. It sounds crazy, but it's that perfect. There are certain coins once in a while where the MS-70 designation matters, and those are the older coins, the older, newer modern coins. And I've had some that I've sent in a couple times where they'll grade at 69 and then they'll finally grade it at 70. The thing you have to realize with this, with the coin grading, and you talk about geniuses, folks. So you get a group of guys that are smart about coins years back in the 80s, and they started an independent third-party grading service called PCGS, and then there was another one called NGC for the American Numismatic Association. And they just start encapsulating and grading coins, and then as time goes on, you know, they get a better reputation and more knowledgeable, which is nice because it's encapsulated. You know, and it grows and grows and grows to the point where now they make $300 million a year in profit. And then all these naive people all over the world, especially in the U.S., I mean, I'm talking real naive, they don't understand how the game works, and so they want to send everything in to get it certified. I mean, I had a guy here a while ago. He had 1,300 circulated silver dollars, okay? Circulated. I think we offered him $18 a piece at the time. Not only were they circulated, a lot of them had been cleaned. They'd just been improperly handled. It was just a big pile of stuff. And you might think, well, 18 for a silver dollar. Well, no, a silver dollar, in this case, they only had 3/4 of an ounce of silver in them. But whatever. The point is, whatever we offered. And the guy's like, well, I'm going to get them certified because they're worth more if they're certified. And we're like, sir, no, they're not. And he said, yeah, they are. I looked online. And he pulls out, he says, this $18.96 mine right here that's worth, that you say is worth 18, he said, I saw online that if it's certified, it's worth, you know, like $400. And I said, no, that's because the coin you saw was a much higher grade, probably a rare, much rarer mint mark, you know, and of course he didn't listen. And so he went and sent in 1,300 coins to be graded. Now, remember, I offered him $18 a piece. So he's looking at roughly, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $23,000. Say $23,600 I offered him. He sends in 1,300 coins to be graded, pays $14 a coin, plus shipping both directions, registered and insured. Ended up spending every penny he could have got out of the coins on having them graded by an independent third-party grading service. In tons of occasions, the grading service called them cleaned and improperly handled and scratched and all kinds of things wrong like this, right? So they just absolutely just slaughterhoused him. So he brings them in to us. He says, hey, you know, I guess this didn't work out. I guess you were right. And we said at first, well, you're going to have to take them all out of those holders. Well, those holders are very hard. They're made out of an inert plastic that you can beat on and beat on. They've turned into, I kind of joke about it, I call it gummy bear plastic because it doesn't want to break. So I let them work away at that for an hour or two and finally figured, okay, fine, I'll just buy them from this guy. And I had a full-time employee spend another couple days taking those all the way back out of the holder. I mean, think about it. You come in with a bunch of silver dollars, you get offered $18 a piece because they're low-end junk. You say, no, I know more because I've been on the internet. So then you go spend probably $17 a coin to get them graded. Then you get them back. total disappointment. Then what do? Then you take them to the coin shop, and the coin shop says you got to take them all back out of those holders you just averaged $17 a piece for. So that's one example. Another example is the subjectivity of grading. People will buy coins, and folks, don't do this. This is so unfair. People will literally. Now, when you send a coin in to get it graded, the grading's subjective. You're dealing with human beings. It's not a perfect science. In fact, if it was, they'd make sure it wasn't, because it's so profitable for them to have to keep the human component in there, because we do all the time what we call crackouts. That means we submit a coin once for grading. We don't like the grade. We get it back. We submit it again. We don't like the grade. We get it back. And every time, and as you go, I said, I was explaining that gentleman silver dollars. That was the cheapest service, you know, the 14, 15, it's actually more like $18 service. But it takes months and months and months to get your coins back. So, you know, the more you pay, the quicker you get it back, and so on and so forth. I think you get my picture. So we've, you know, we're pretty knowledgeable on that stuff. That's why they used to have everything pre-screened by dealers, not to waste the money. And then they thought, well, what the heck's the difference if we're certifying all this stuff and the person's losing their tail? It's no skin off our back. So they just let it go through, and they take advantage of these people, and they take these huge amounts of money. But at the same time, the people have a hard time believing us that we know what we're talking about, because we've been down that road before. We know the whole game, right? It's what we do. So, anyway, that's just one thing. But what I was going to say is there's crackouts where they miss it, and you resubmit it and resubmit it and resubmit it. There's guys who make very good livings going to major coin shows. I know guys, literally, you're not going to believe this, that make over $500,000 a year just cracking out coins, just looking for mistakes or undergraded coins from the grading services. Mistakes. I mean, literal, you know, they get in a bad mood, they get cocky, they get arrogant. We've been through it all. So, you know, but what I was going to say is I had a good friend who bought like 20 really good items, and he got them all certified, and a bunch of them came back a lot higher than we guessed, and one came back lower, and he wanted to complain about the one that was lower, and I'm like, come on, man. Early on, I learned a lesson. I gave a guy money back when he got an AU-58 on a 32D quarter that later graded 64, MS-64. So I sold it as an MS-62, and so when it came back AU-58, I gave him like a $700 refund. Then he got it in an MS-64 holder, and it went up about $4,000. And, of course, he didn't offer me anything then. So I don't want to get too into that, but there's some of you that know who you are out there that you're getting a little too hung up on the grading. Don't do it. Just buy coins for the sake of coins. Invest, collect and invest in coins. We have the coins that matter here are certified by the independent third-party grading services. If they need to be certified, they will be when you buy them as an investor from us. If they don't, they'll be in a, you know, in a sealed box, taken very good care of. So don't, you know, worry about that. We do specialize in buying in states and collections and building portfolios. It really is who we are. And so we use the term scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. If you've got old stuff sitting around, dig it out. Another thing that I've just, as I've watched the markets, I guess kind of what I was tilting towards at the beginning of the show, then I'm going to get back to the fact that I want to do a show on the fundamentals of investing and finance and econ. Okay, if you know, at the beginning of the show, I was talking a little bit about, you know, reevaluating things. I mean, and I won't get into it too much here, but there's certain coins and stuff that we're going to start taking harder looks at. You know, it may be a good time to trade some of that stuff back in and just get into straight bullion. And when I say bullion, folks, how many people out there think that means a gold bar, right? Raise your hand. Because I'm telling you, boy, that's what I run into all the time. But chicken bullion, it's funny because you say chicken bullion, it's a little cube you put in the broth. Chicken or gold bullion is a completely different spelling. They have nothing in common. They mean nothing, but it's so funny that everybody thinks it's a cube or a bar if it's bullion. It's not. It's just, it doesn't matter the shape of what it is. If it's gold or silver and you're buying the gold or silver content, I don't care if it's stamped into, you know, Cupid. It's still bullion if you're just trading it for their for its bullion and value. So bullion is B-O-U-I-L. I'm trying to remember this grammar stuff. Okay, so let's remember this, okay? So we've got bullion, I think, for chicken soup is B-O-U-I-L-L-O-N is my guess. B-O-U-I-L-L-O-N. That's chicken bullion. When we deal in bullion, gold and silver bullion, it's B-U-L-L-I-O-N. So the two aren't even the same word, okay? So there's some information you never needed, except for a lot of people think they're bars. So why don't we, oh my gosh, I have so much stuff I love to go over, but I end up doing so little of it. Just remember, Proverbs 12, he who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment. What do you invest your money in? Do you invest your money in a fantasy, or do you invest your money in solid ground? You want to invest your money in solid ground, right? You want something solid. You want something stable. You want something that's going to last. That's what we're here to help you do. I'm looking through these incredible 2011 predictions for the future that are so accurate. I mean, this guy is crazy. This is crazy. I might get to that. This guy here, what is this guy's name? They call him the Prophet of Doom. Ooh, that's the nickname I want. It says, this Prophet of Doom predicts stock market will plunge more than 50%. This is published July 30th, 2018. And it says, and folks, I'm not just here to try to scare you. I'm just looking at truth. My whole thing is like, you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day, right? My whole thing is I look at the reality of it all. I want the truth of it all. I really want truth. And you know what, folks? I'm going to slip something in here for you. Will you pray for us? I mean, I'm going to be honest with you that just I appreciate it. I know there's some prayer warriors out there. I don't know how deep to go, but, you know, there's some family stuff, not in my immediate, but I don't want to get into detail. There's a certain family member that needs, he was raised a believer, and he's just struggling, we'll say. And if you asked him, he'd say he was doing fine, but there's a lot of pride issues and stuff, and I pray for that. I ask that you'd pray for us. I ask, you know, honestly, that you'd pray for us in general. 2018 has been a crazy year for us. I mean, it's been the year I built a house about 7-8 years ago. They say the average lifespan of a lot of appliances and pumps and things are like 7-8 years. Guess what? I have vehicles. I mean, I must have just decided to buy all these things around the same time, and like everything's breaking at the same time. So financially, it's just been putting the hurt on. And that's really getting a little bit personal, but, you know, it just gets old after a while. It just starts putting the heavy on. So that, and when you're on the air, when you do what we do, once I got on the air and I had Matt Shea's wife working here, and I mean, I just started to have some crazy stuff happen. And I'm like, I can't believe this stuff. And she said, it's spiritual attack. She said, as soon as Matt got on the air and as soon as Matt did this or that, Matt Shea, she said he just started to really get, you know, the attacks of the devil, the enemy. The enemy wants to nullify us. So, it's weird to ask for prayer because we need it. Prayer is like the best thing you can do. I've asked for prayer. I've had people call me and accuse me of having like huge business problems, things because I said, hey, pray for us. I mean, what is in the heart of man? Sometimes, right? But if you just would take a moment and just pray, and we'll pray for you. We pray for you too all the time. I pray for the shows. I pray the Holy Spirit would lead my wording. It's important. So I'm just telling you, we could sure use it. We've got a few kind of unspoken wishes. We're trying to do in our own personal life. We're doing some restructuring, hopefully, where we can free ourselves up a little bit. I built, like I said, this big whopping mansion. I don't know if I'd go that far, but a nice house on the water back 7-8 years ago. And, of course, the taxes are just, you wouldn't even believe what the taxes are. You wouldn't even believe it. It's so wrong, folks. It's so wrong. Our tax structure, what we've done to ourselves is wrong. R-O-N-G, wrong. Just kidding. It's W-R-O-N-G, but it's wrong. It's not right. Our founding fathers would just hurl in their grave, folks. This is not what they ever wanted. This is not what they ever wanted to see. This is not what their dream was. Folks, we've got people voting for outright socialists now. Socialism is on the move. What is the problem with socialism? Oh, my goodness. I hope you know better than that. It is the form of government straight from the devil where you take from what they want to call the rich and give to the poor. They teach our kids Robin Hood's this great guy that ran around, stole from the rich and gave to the poor. And it's wrong. I mean, granted, I'll give you this, okay? The rich should be more generous, and they should. They get pious and arrogant and pompous and everything else. That's why the book of Proverbs is very clear about that. The book of Proverbs was written, Solomon was trying to warn his son Rehoboam. And Rehoboam got pulled down from his horse by his own people. And the rest of them stood by while he got beat to death or murdered or whatever. I don't know that it necessarily says in detail. But the fact of the matter is, Solomon was trying really hard to warn his son, and I get that. I get that. I've been there, done that, you know, and it's really weird sometimes when the devil will find any attack point to get into your home, okay, and a lot of times it's for our kids. And the problem that you got to realize, here's the problem, okay, that it leads. Okay, you start out as a child, and I did this, as making choices, okay? You make choices. I'll smoke that cigarette, or yeah, I'll drink that beer, or yeah, what the heck, I'll try that drug, okay? So you start out with choices. Then what happens is those choices become habits, because you go out, what do? You go out and party every weekend. And then pretty soon it's a habit, and then pretty soon that habit becomes automatic. It becomes a normal part of who you are. Eventually, it becomes your identity, and it's a chain, and it's a scary, hard chain. I grew up, this is like way too personal disclosure. I want to go fast so I can get to the point of the show. Folks, I grew up in Montana. I mean, I was probably literally drinking too much on the weekends in like between 7th and 8th grade. I wasn't alone. I mean, we would get in Great Falls, Montana, a tiny little, town of 40,000. I mean, we'd get like 30 kids out in the middle of the country club golf course in the middle of the night that snuck out of their house drinking booze at the age of 13. I mean, this is what we were doing. You know, it's not all we were doing, but you get my point. You know, those are choices you don't see. The problem is you don't know you're making those choices when you're a kid. You don't realize. I don't think you do. That's why, you know, it says raise a child up in the way they should go and they won't depart from it. You know, there's so much more you need to do. And then once we got this business going and our business took a toll, I mean, time wise, it just took off. And then I had Isaac working for me forever. And he was, he had Asperger's, for those of you who don't know him. He was very high maintenance and extremely, I learned years later that he was stealing. It's like I knew in my spirit, I always knew he was from me, not you. I've had customers come in and say, well, what about me? What about me? It's like, well, okay, let me get this right. I have a multi-million dollar inventory that he was in complete control of, and he's going to go in your safe deposit box and dig around your stuff. No, he never, there's never, ever, ever been an issue with a customer having anything disappear here ever, ever. We have a depository service. We have a system, a protocol that's pretty good. No one's ever allowed in there without our accompaniment. We take good care of your stuff, folks, okay? Really important to understand. It's also important to understand right now that even though you can look and say, well, things are good, they tell us things are pretty good, don't they? Well, things are great, right? I mean, the economy is booming. Folks, this is different, okay? I mean, I hate to admit it, but this isn't the Clinton era. You know, when they act like, oh, the economy is doing so good because the stock market's way up. But it's not like the Clinton era. I was in banking in the Clinton era. Folks, I was a regional manager for Bank of America. I had an unlimited expense account. Banks were making money hand over fist. We were doing non-conforming lending like crazy, which means anybody got a loan. Okay, I didn't make the rules. The banks didn't even make the rules. They took all the heat, but they didn't make the rules. Okay, I mean, they were different times. That is not where we live now. Now we live in a hyper overregulated society that they tell us we're doing really good because the stock market's up. And if you have your money in the stock market, you're probably doing okay. But you're not doing near as good as the indexes say you are, because I've explained that they're a weighted moving average. In fact, that's a perfect transition. Let's do the radio show. Okay, real quick here. Now we're going to do fundamentals. We're going to keep going, and I got to get buzzing here. So just to touch on it, this guy here, this prophet of doom, predicts stock market will plunge by more than 50%. John Hussman's his name. He's the president of Hussman Investment Trust. He's an economist, philanthropist, realist, optimist. You hear that? He's often viewed as the prophet of doom, even though he's an optimist. On his Twitter profile. Oh, no. They say he's an optimist, but on his Twitter profile, people try to smear his name as a prophet of doom. And, folks, I want to tell you something about this, too. With why I have a really strong math background. Those of you who've heard, you know, all my resume and my banking and my mathematics and statistics and actuarial science and postgrad, you know, studies of everything from economics to whatever, and then banking hands-on experience. I'll tell you what, there's nothing like real-world experience running businesses and banks and things like that, because I get employees and I have relatives. And people that think they actually know a lot, but until you've really done it, there's a totally different mindset and a different thought process. And it's kind of sad, because there's a certain kind of person, you know, that we're supposed to do everything as unto the Lord. Well, the biggest issue is, what is your view of the Lord? Do you love God? And I mean, do you really love him? Do you believe in him? Do you trust him? Or do you put your faith in man and your faith in yourself? And you think because you're young, you're healthy, you're never going to have anything go wrong. You know what, folks? That is not the way it really is going to work out. First of all, second of all, it doesn't matter. You want to give God your prime of your life. You don't sit and feed your flesh while you're at the prime of your life. And then sadly, and we all do this, when we end up with cancer or an open heart surgery, we become really close to the Lord. That's not what it's all about. Okay, it's about walking with God through all things. And God's good all the time, folks. That's the hard thing sometimes, isn't it? I mean, I catch myself saying that. I'm like, ooh, I better be careful. I don't want to offend him. But, you know, it's hard sometimes. It's hard because faith, knowing God exists, to me, is pretty obvious. There's no way the theory of evolution, I mean, I don't care how many billions and billions and tens of billions of years you add in. It just doesn't work. You can't make stuff out of nothing, even if you got a lot of extra time. If I put you in an oven and I say, here's a rock, I want you to make me a steak dinner. I want crab legs. I want shrimp. I want a beautiful chocolate dessert pie. And I want, you know, I want a beautiful bottle of Chardonnay wine, and I want, you know, and on I go. And you're like, you gave me a rock. Yeah. So I'm not putting any time limit on you. You can take as long as you want to make this meal, but all I've got is a rock. Well, then I'll give you more time. How much time do you need? Well, Folks, you're not going to make a gourmet meal out of a rock just because I give you more time, right? And that's the problem that we're faced with, isn't it? It's just so stupid. So faith easy-ish, okay? Obviously, there's a God. People debate whether, you know, deism and all that, did he wind up the clock and just let it run? I say no way. He's into personal relationships. He says he is. He's clearly is. Just the hard part is magnitude. He's way over our head. But you know what? He cares about you. God cares about every listener out there. No matter what you've done, no matter what you're doing, no matter what you're struggling with, God does miracles. It says, the Bible says, God can make a way where there is no way. Okay? I know that I've had people listen to my radio show that are struggling with addictions. I know that I've had people listening to trip over my radio station that are committing or preparing to commit suicide. I mean, I know for a fact you've contacted me and told me that, and I've had some really bizarre shows where the Holy Spirit led me to talk about that stuff when it wasn't had nothing to do with the show. So I know, and I just want people to know that God cares about every last one of you. You are not less of a person because you're not, you know, you're not genetically gifted in the areas of other people. You cannot compare yourself to others. You compare yourself to yourself. And I'll tell you what, you know, the hardest thing is you can't give advice to family. It's so weird. It's like Jesus said, you know, even a prophet's not recognized in his own hometown. And he shook off the dust and he left, which is kind of sad, isn't it? But just because you're not, you know, the superstar here or the superstar there and your cousin is, it doesn't mean you're less of a person. God made you the way he made you. There are so many talents and abilities on the inside, folks, of love and compassion and art and singing and drawing and encouragement and joy and peace. And, you know, God gave us all something, okay? And there's people out there struggling right now with all kinds of addictions and all kinds of problems. Just know that with God, he can make a way when there is no way. He is God. Now realize, he made the entire universe, all of it, every bit of it, okay? All of it. All of it, everything. Now why then does he not just step up and clean up our messes all the time? Well, what do kids learn when you do that? Nothing. And we have the minds of a child in so many ways. It's just, you know, he'll come around in due time and answer prayers, and I, you know, we want to just lift up prayers to all those people. Everyone's struggling with something. There's people out there listening to me that are going through chemotherapy. I mean, gosh, you know, I've often wondered, is, you know, what's worse, coming down off heroin or going through some of these chemo treatments? And you're putting your hope in it because that's what they do, and sometimes it's a lie and sometimes it's not, but you don't know where to go or where to turn because you never know, right? You're like, well, I don't want to take the risk. I want to stay here, you know? So it's tough, folks. I get it. I get that it's tough. I get that we struggle. That's part of our life. I mean, it's just unfortunately part of being a fallen man. And those are the times we grow and learn and improve our discipline. And we've all screwed up. I mean, I've screwed up many times. My life is the product of mistakes. My life is the product of, you know, like I said, drinking young, smoking marijuana, super young. And then, you know, doing some other things, getting involved in various, you know, criminal activity. Nothing that ever put me in prison or anything like that, but just stuff I shouldn't have been doing. And then in college, I became a big athlete and a big, strong, tough guy. And I was a big street brawler and, you know, spent too much time in the bars. Just really sad to see a waste like that. And then, you know, as you get older, then you deal with stuff. And, you know, probably the hardest thing for me is when I lost my father. He'd gone from being the worst dad ever to becoming my absolute best friend, thanks to Jesus Christ, who led him to himself magically, mystically, after I turned it all over. So enough is enough is enough. But what we need to do is stick to the basics, and I am not doing that. So this guy, the Prophet of Doom, he's got, he's telling people to prepare for the biggest stock market sell-off in months, years, I'm sorry, years. His name's Hussman. And yeah, so I don't know. So they call him the Prophet of Doom, and I don't want to get too into it because that's not the point of the show. He's got a lot of statistics, a lot of graphs. You can go look it up for yourself. All you got to do is go find, just type in MarketWatch and Prophet of Doom. And he is not, he does all kinds of stock valuations and measurements of market internals. He says, the present, our measures of market internals remain unfavorable, partly because of deterioration in interest credit sensitive sectors, as well as tepid participation, which is the number of individual stocks participating in various market advances, divergent leadership, for example, a large number of stocks simultaneously hitting 52-week highs and lows, and the divergences we observe in an array of other sectors. These trends suggest investors are becoming less willing to take on risk. They're becoming risk-averse, I would call it. A bad sign for equities as stocks generally flourish when market participants are willing to take risky bets. Okay, so right now people don't want risk. They want conservatism. That's why metals make sense. Get into metals. It's conservatism. I mean, you want it. You want solid, long-term, guaranteed stability and growth. Just because your good old-fashioned Dow Jones is up to, you know, whatever it is. I'm sorry I don't watch it close enough because I think it's a bunch of malarkey. But I just think that you need to know enough to avoid the pitfalls of the indexes. Okay, so do that. So let's talk. Let's do fundamentals, basic fundamentals, part two. I can go all over the place. Here's the bottom line. Starting, I mean, other than, okay, we began, oh boy, I could go back. What do? We created a gold standard at the creation of the Constitution. We gave the authority to control that to Congress. Money. The creation of money, okay? I think it's Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution gives the Congress... I'm going to check this out. Let's see if I can get a short, sweet quote on it. To make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing, blah, blah, blah. That's not it. What enumerated powers of Article 1, Section 8. Where is it? Whatever. Okay, that's the overview of it. But anyway, Congress was given the authority to create money, to borrow money on the credit of the United States, to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among blah, 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 to establish a uniform rule of naturalization, to coin money, regulate the value thereof and of foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures. To coin money, right, and establish and regulate the value thereof. Okay, so they were in charge of money. So what they do in night now from that was... And then in 1792, they created the U.S. Coinage Act. That's when they said punishable by death to counterfeit. And this was after they had gone through some serious problems with continental currency. They had had the British come and counterfeit the tar out of this stuff, which is kind of crazy because... They use a leaf. They use the veins of a leaf to verify and authenticate the legitimacy of the money. But it's like a fingerprint, and somehow they found ways to copy that. I don't know. But the bottom line is they counterfeited it until they about bankrupted the colonies. They did. And so Jefferson said it was a providential event because at that point their constitutional write-up drafts included paper money, and they tossed it out. They just went straight gold and silver, period. No debate, no question. Then in the Coinage Act, it said if any man ever debases the currency, He is to be put to death. Well, guess what? We've seen that. We've seen the debasement over and over again. We suck. But see, here's where we've changed. We got Abraham Lincoln, who went in and he created fiat currency for the North to win the war against the South. He created money out of thin air. He borrowed it. And in 1872, after the Civil War, which went from, what, 1860-61 to 64, after the Civil War in 1872, which is really only 8 years later, who came in and helped? Our Congress came in and said, we're not going to be like this. We're going to pay this debt off, and they did. They paid the debt off, and they couldn't stand it. They weren't going to live this way. This was not America. Now, think about that. And then they had, you know, different banks crashing and bankers running off with people's money because the bankers were living the high life. Trust me, I understand. I've been in banking. I've seen the people at the top. Bankers don't make anything. I was a regional manager over a three-state region almost. And I mean, I was not making, you'd be surprised. But boy, did I have the big title, right? And that's the same with these poor branch managers. When you go into your little Wells Fargo branch and you go see your gal and she's sweet and she's a manager, they don't make much. By the way, folks, from years and years of banking experience, you want some advice? My advice is keep your banking relationship local, okay? Don't go with the Wells Fargos and the B of A's and these big national conglomerates. They do. I'm just going to be candid. I had a lot of years experience. They don't care about you. They want huge commercial accounts. They will schmooze you and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like when I sold an ATV a while ago for $8,000 cash and the gal went into the bank to get the money, oh my goodness, that gal took a beating from the teller. That's none of the teller's business. But you know what? There's little banks like even I think American West Bank is gone. That was that when I was in banking with B of A, they were the worst competition. The local banks are the hard ones to compete against because they deal with real people. They know the people. They're not just looking at numbers on a screen. So I'm telling you right now, go for it. If you are looking or you want the right relationship, if you live in North Idaho, do like Panhandle State Bank. Just get some local bank. You know, Washington Trust is an excellent bank. They're solid as a rock. You know, if you go there, tell them I referred you. No. I've been dealing with them for quite a while. Before that, it was American West Bank. I mean, small banks are tough. I don't know much about Inland Northwest Bank, but it's locally owned, and I know that it can't be worse than these huge mega conglomerates like, you know, the Costco of banks or whatever that they become. So it's important, I think, to have a nice, good local relationship when you need it. I really do, I think. I think it's important. So that's a little piece of advice, a little bit of tidbit. So we had the Coinage Act of 1792. Then we remained on the gold standard. And then we had wildcat banks and we had state banks. We tried all kinds of banks. We tried all kinds of currency. Everything was based on the buddy system. Everything was based on certificates of deposit, which meant you gave them a $20 gold piece, they gave you a $20 bill in return. Problem is, a lot of the banks ran off of that stuff. So people got tired of it. They wanted centralized banking because they had no authority. If a local bank ran off with all their stuff, they had no authority. So then they wanted central banking. They wanted some kind of authority. Well, you don't need to create the Federal Reserve to get national reciprocity in trying to pursue cross-state line crimes. Back then, they had some laws that really protected the criminal. Shocker, right? We must learn from them. So that's nothing new under the sun, as Solomon says. So you don't have to worry about that. So anyway, where I was going with this, as long as I've been doing it, 9/11, September 11th of 2001. I mean, is that not when our world changed drastically? Now, there's this thing called the People for a New American Century. They were Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and even George Bush and and whatnot. These guys wanted, they even wrote in their manifesto, they needed a Pearl Harbor-style event. They weren't saying that they wanted to create one. They weren't deterring it. They were saying it will come, and it's got to be an event of that caliber to get people to give up all their civil rights. And you know what, folks? Slowly by slowly, we're doing it. There's still the gun kooks out there like myself who have all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, I like tactical stuff. I've got, you know, cool pistols and nice, very nice quality ARs and things like that. That's what I collect. People ask about that. Folks, it's kind of weird when I say, yeah, I'm into tactical weapons and I'll trade for coins as a collector, and people will bring me collectible guns. I don't want an old 18 or 06. You know, if it's a Sharps rifle or, you know, I mean, if it's something that's like really, really cool and really special and really old, then yeah, bring it in if it's something really awesome. But other than that, no, I don't want it. But the point being is, you know, I will trade. I'm interested in that. But I also have like crazy guns for sale as a collector, like a Barrett A107, which is a fully automatic or semi-automatic 50 caliber. It takes rounds that are like 6 or 7 inches long each, and it's totally legal, but you can't really enjoy it because you have to shoot 2 miles to even be challenged. A lot of information there, folks. Sorry about that. So 9/11 is when things changed. It's when things really started to take a turn for the worst. We were stumped for a while, and then we jumped into gear. We knew what we were supposed to do, which is kind of weird. And then we started to go after the airports. Well, the airports aren't really, because they're going to try to use the plane for a weapon again. Now the reason that they control you at the airports is just your civil rights. I'm not a human being. I have no rights. That's what you need to think when you go through the airport. That's just where we're at. So the world's politics and economics began a correction toward historical norms on September 11th, 2001. What do I mean by that? I mean, we had been through the dot-com craze and all these crazy things, and the markets had ran. I personally can give you all the reasons in the world. 9/11 could have been avoided, whether it was real, whether it was not. I mean, it was real, obviously, but whether it was, you know, planned or not, that's just a big conversation. I have theories on it. I'm very conspiratorial about it. I believe that there's so much more to it than meets the eye. I think it's very obvious. And I think the fact that we jumped into gear so fast to rebuild everything so that you have nothing when you travel anymore. And then they keep making the planes smaller so they can get more seats on the plane so they can make more money. I mean, it's frustrating, right? The tensions rise. There's more flights going everywhere all the time. The airports are full. Planes are canceled all the time. All the time. Okay. Now, when you look at Daniel's prophecy of people traveling around the world, that's kind of freaky. I mean, we're sitting in a time right now that I believe that Daniel prophesied about, you know, people traveling to and fro around the world and knowledge, you know, increasing. I mean, guess what? How about now? How about Daniel 12 is now? I think, but will it get more? You know, I mean, it is, how much more do you need? That's what I don't understand. I know God's got a plan. I know God knows what man does. I know God knows what man does. He's going, you know, man takes a beautiful earth, and he's no stranger to ruining things. We don't know the history of mankind on this earth other than what the Bible tells us. But we've done some bad things. Plastic, I hate plastic. Folks, I hate it. Now a lot of the recycling is over. They don't even do recycling anymore because it costs too much, supposedly, or something. And there's literal patches, folks. There are areas in the middle of the ocean that are literally hundreds of miles long and hundreds of miles wide where all the currents come together and all the trash collects. You can find all kinds of dead animals there, dead dead dolphins, dead whales. They get caught up in all this stuff and they get stuck and it's filthy and it's sad. And plastic never decomposes. It'll break down into teeny little pieces, but it's always plastic. I don't get it. I don't like it. I don't think that we're being good stewards with it. And it bothers me. So it's important to understand when we're dealing with this that everything changed at 9/11. That's when the whole world changed. You can't go back and try to relive the dot-com craze. It's over. That's why even with Trump propping this stuff up, all this is, all that we're seeing right now, folks, I promise you, is just hyperinflation. It's all the currency that Obama created coming back to roost, okay? Now, the current path that we're on in this nation of being led by the central banking fiat currency system, it really is propelling the globe towards an imminent economic and financial collapse at an increasing pace. Now, that's all doom and gloomy, but I'm just telling you mathematics, sound mathematics. I used to challenge anybody to call in and give me the math, give me the argument. And back in 2008, I was reading radio shows, I was writing back then, and I was telling people back then, I was like, if you have rare coins, get out now. I was telling people, get out of your rare coins and get into precious metals now. Well, guess what happened? The rare coin market had peaked out. Precious metals were still cheap. People that took my advice got out of their rare coins nicely, and they got into bullion, as you will, gold and silver, at really opportune prices. Silver was probably still 5, 6, 7, 8 an ounce. It went all the way to 50. Gold was still, in the $300 range or whatever, and it went all the way to 2,000. And then the rare coins kind of diminished because they lost their focus. Now, good quality rare coins, that's a different deal. But so I was reading this stuff, and I'm thinking, that's what got me kind of thinking. Is this a time that we need to start thinking about that? So I'm going to be thinking about that a lot now, and I'll be talking to you about it if you've got some of these portfolios built. But the problem is some of the stuff, luxury items, they go down, waterfront real estate, it goes down. And sometimes the question is, do you really want to take a loss on it, on some of the stuff you might have bought, and just to get into something else that has more upside potential? Or do you really want to get after it so that I can do very well on it? I can't believe I had a good friend that just wanted to sell his gold, and I talked him out of it one day, and another day he came in and said, I don't care, you can't talk me out of it, I'm sure, blah blah blah, it's gonna go bad, it's gonna go south. And he actually had no clue what the deal was, but it did turn out that he ended up doing very well. So anyway, sorry about that. So we got the central banks running everything. It's important to know, are your assets properly preserved for the future of financial uncertainty? That's the magic question, isn't it? I mean, you need to just prepare yourself. It's that simple. Folks, that's really what I guess I'm getting at, is it's just simplicity, okay? It's just pure simplicity. Is do the right thing. Okay, don't bring it all in. I mean, I get people that are like, I want to put it all in. That's fine. People get frustrated with me sometimes because during the day I'm so hard to get a hold of. But Mike's a sharp cookie. He'll help you out. If you want to get really strict on details, probably I'm your guy, just because that's what my area specialty is. But overall, we have got to get ourselves to, a point where we are building an asset and wealth base that is good to grow. Okay, so, here we are out of time again. Fundamentals, not saying too fundamental. Precious metals they are the pinnacle form of wealth. Folks, this is just basically what I want you to know. Precious metals, they are the pinnacle form of wealth throughout history. We've talked about it over and over again, and you're like, oh, gosh, here we go again. But they are. They've remained that way. They're not an investment because it's real money. They are real money. They're true wealth. They're documented, tested, and true from the earliest written human history. What's really weird about them is they've never lost their value. Do they fluctuate? Mostly recently with the manipulation of what we call the COMEX. They created the Commodities Exchange to play games with the price of metals and other commodities. No one had ever done that before. They play games with farmers' commodities, with gas, with everything else. I mean, you just don't even want to go there, what they do with that thing. It's not good. We'll put it that way. It's just it wasn't. The Commodities Exchange was not created for the betterment of mankind. How about that? We just accept the fact that it was put there to protect the uber rich from you and I being able to do anything with our money without their concise permission. Okay. And so that's where, you know, you just got to believe me. So without further ado, and we've kind of gone on and on and on without going on. You're not getting accurate information on inflation figures. Your spending power of your dollar is dropping. We are in the middle of hyperinflation. Basically, where I'm at is this. When do you buy? Okay, buy. Value-based buying, folks. When do you buy? Now, I say now. I say take advantage of. Now, historically, you talk to anybody in the metals business, in coins, what do they all tell you? I've told you this. If you've listened to me for years, you've heard me say, summers are the slowest. And then what happened? Winters are the biggest. Do you, you know, I have clients, a contractor in particular, who buys in the summer and sells in the winter. He buys in like June and sells in December and makes really good money every year. So anyway, now is the time. It doesn't have to be all your money, just a small portion. Give us a call. 444-0044. Let us build your portfolio. We'll take care of it. It doesn't have to be a lot. Just savings, 10, 15, 20,000, whatever you got. Bring it in. We'll take care of you. Thanks for tuning in. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye. We'll be back Friday. Bye-bye.